Her comments caused quite a bit of commotion. "Holy shit!" I exclaimed, and that was one of the most coherent comments of the bunch. Earl's hunch had been right. There was a pattern emerging, and it was scary as hell. I wasn't the only one with crazy news to report. The South Africans had confirmed to Priest that there had been reports of isolated villages being found totally emptied of people, cooking fires still burning, vehicles still running, all with signs of tunneling nearby. Lee had managed to get a similar story to that of the Korean woman out of one of the Chinese hunters about the underwater city. National security was one thing, but most hunters realized that there were some threats out there a lot bigger than any one country. The PLA interpreter was going to have a cow, but none of us gave a crap about their lost submarine when we were more worried about what had destroyed it. Julie had gotten rumors of strange new activity in the Paris underground from the French, and Earl had heard that one of the Russian companies had lost an entire team to an unknown entity that had been terrorizing a mine in Siberia. Earl had ordered us to meet back in his room. A cartoony world map had been bought from the hotel gift shop and affixed to the wall. Pushpins were stuck into various locations, as more hunters reported in. Over the last hour, we'd gone through a 50-pack of pushpins, and there were still more stories coming in.
"How could we not have heard?" Julie asked in amazement. "This is staggering."
"It isn't like we all hang out together. And you think our government-mandated secrecy is bad? We're nothing compared to some of these places."
Earl read a message off his phone, shook his head sadly, and stuck another pin into a comically distorted Mongolia.
"More tunnels. Of course, we've heard of some of these, but we always thought of them as random monster attacks, outbreaks, craziness. But this..."
He stepped away, as if he was trying to see the whole picture. The three of us studied the map. I couldn't put my finger on what was troubling me. Rates had been up before. When I first got hired, we were at an all-time high.
"Sure, but that was stateside, and mostly because of the private hunting ban. It was individuals, monsters here and there, the natural growth of a predatory population that had lost the best thing that kept it in check. These, on the other hand..."
Julie stroked her neck thoughtfully.
"These are oddball events with bigger repercussions, and all over the last few years. MHI alone has faced two since then that if they'd gotten out..."
"Three,"
Earl corrected.
"Copper Lake was another tip-of-the-iceberg-type event. If I hadn't shut that down quick, it could have turned a lot worse. Ours were all connected, though. Machado was being used by the old ones, then Hood was working for the same old one, and his daughter was somehow involved in Copper Lake."
"But that was after we killed their god, Earl. That's hard for a religion to bounce back from."
"Christianity seemed to do all right,"
he said.
"That's because it didn't stick. So, three events related tangentially to the minions of a specific old one, but he, it, whatever, is toast. So do we think something like him is pulling these strings? These new events, they're like ours. Little things that could spiral out of control in no time."
"A few," I answered. "But there are so many where we don't know what happened. People missing, or some type of creature shows up and then disappears, and most of them with an underground connection."
"Like they've been sleeping for a long time, and they're all starting to wake up. But why? Where are they going? So we've got a rash of two types of events, things waking up, and other things poking us with a stick. Testing us."
Earl muttered, staring at the map.
"These aren't outbreaks. This is a mobilization."
"Of what?"
"I don't know, but this is what Myers was seeing. And now I think I know why that son of a bitch was suffering from insomnia. Hell. Makes you wonder what else he knew about and couldn't tell us."
"You should call Duane,"
Julie suggested.
"Got his number?"
It was a testament to how troubling the situation seemed that Earl wasn't joking. So have we decided all these things are connected? I asked, already knowing the answer, but hoping to be wrong. We making this official?
I just don't know how. We need to talk to everyone. Get as many hunters on the lookout as possible,
Earl ordered.
Shouldn't be a problem, though. From what I saw, word's already gotten out. Most of us are a suspicious bunch by nature. After the bunch with Z started swapping stories, all the sharp hunters know something's up. I wouldn't be surprised if there are 10 maps just like this one in this hotel by now.
Thank goodness for this conference, or we might not have put things together.
Julie trailed off.
What?
Then I realized what she'd thought of. The conference.
Thought of that already,
Earl said.
The timing seems a little suspicious to be holding the first annual one of these things. Almost like they wanted all these different bunches of hunters to put their heads together.
One hell of a coincidence. Did the MCB want us to figure this out on our own? Then I shook my head and answered my own question. That doesn't make any sense. They didn't put this thing on, but if they were trying to keep all these trends secret, why allow the conference to take place at all? Why not just send us all an email and say, "Attention, hunters, be on the lookout for an invasion of mole people."
Maybe it isn't the MCB pulling the strings,
Earl said.
Who then?
Julie asked.
ICMIP has private organizers, but there's no way they'd be allowed to do this without government approval.
Nobody. Never mind.
Earl looked around, then picked up the notepad from the nightstand table and scribbled a brief note. Not now. Room might be bugged. Julie and I glanced at the walls nervously. Earl nodded, deadly serious. What the hell had we gotten ourselves into? The mood at ICMHP had changed drastically over the last few hours. Earlier, it had been sort of a festive environment. Now, half the crowd was somber, as they realized that they weren't alone, and things were messed up all over the rest of the world, too. And the other half was really excited, because they'd come to the same conclusion, and were now figuring out how they could make money off the situation by blowing things up. Hunters are proactive like that. I caught a couple of the panels that sounded interesting, where the topics were about the technical end of hunting. It turned out that the German, Lindemann, was a former member of the elite German counterterrorism unit GSG-9, and a walking encyclopedia of how to kill dangerous fey. That panel alone was worth the price of admission. Sure, he had insulted me earlier, but at least I had been insulted by the best. Then I went to one of the boring policy ones, but my wife was on the panel, so I had no choice. She spent most of it arguing with some idiot professor who was advocating fair trials for intelligent undead. After that was another one on puff filing and how to get timely payments from the Treasury, but I snuck out after 15 minutes of listening to information that I already knew about. The conversations in the halls were different than before. Stupid hunters didn't live long, and we worked in a business that fostered a healthy sense of paranoia. The guests knew that something was coming up, and many of them had come to the same conclusions that we had. The conference was rigged. The timing was too suspicious. The official policymakers hadn't wanted the world's hunters to know what was going on. But someone else with sufficient pull had arranged to pull us all together where the subject would surely arise, but they weren't direct enough to simply come out and say it. The keynote address was next. When I had read the description earlier, and it said that it was going to be the MCB director discussing policy, I hadn't expected there to be much turnout. But now, with all of the fresh new conspiracy theories floating around, there was already a crowd formed outside the banquet hall doors waiting for the keynote to begin. Unfortunately, some of the men loitering around the hall were PT douchebags, which meant that I needed to hang back in order not to violate the restraining order. But since I really wanted to hear what Stark was going to say, I just waited until the lights went down before sneaking in. The room was packed, so I didn't think anyone would notice me. John Van Zandt, who was also named on the restraining order, was standing in back, too. Agent Franks was the last one in, and he just stood there glowering. A moment later, Director Stark walked out to the podium to sporadic applause. A bunch of unfamiliar bureaucrats came in behind him and sat on folding chairs at the back of the stage. I found it amusing that Stark already had a posse. Myers had got by with just Franks, and then I realized how odd it was that the MCB's single most famous asset had been stuck out here in nowhere land and not in prestige seats. Was there a reason for that? I looked over at Franks, but his expression was as inscrutable as ever. The first few minutes of the keynote were more pre-written nonsense. The only interesting bit was about how the United States government would be awarding several large new contracts for monster-related facility security. The accountant part of my brain filed that away, but the hunter part really wanted to know about this strange underground invasion. Stark changed topics, but now it was more blather about synergy and mission statements. The audience was becoming tense. Now that they knew something was happening worldwide, the hunters were eager for answers. They wanted meat, and they were being given fluff.
"Tell us what you know!"
a man shouted from the center of the room. I couldn't make out who it was, but I was impressed a bunch like this had been patient this long. Stark pretended that he hadn't heard and kept reading. Then another hunter to the side yelled something similar, then another hunter in back raised a rude question, and the bureaucrats behind Stark began to shift nervously. Stark reached up and adjusted his suddenly too tight necktie. It must have been constricting his considerable bulldog jowls.
"Easy, everyone. I don't know what you're carrying on about."
"Lies."
That accusation caused some shifting and looking by the MCB in the audience to see who'd said it. Earl Harbinger saved them the trouble of searching, because he simply stood up so everyone could see him.
"We know about the pattern. We know about the attacks. Don't waste our time."
Stark blanched when he saw who it was. I don't know what their history was, but it was plain to see that Stark didn't like and was a little frightened of Earl Harbinger. What was it with Earl and collecting personal grudges with MCB directors?
"You need to quiet down or I'll have security remove you."
"Security?" Franks sighed dejectedly. "Sweet. I would pay good money to watch Frankenstein and the Wolfman fight. That would be some Clash of the Titans-level awesomeness right there." Earl sat back down, but I could tell that he wasn't done yet. Once Earl got to pushing, he wasn't going to quit until he got what he wanted.
"Now where was I?"
The vibrating of Stark's pocket was picked up over the microphone. He tried to ignore his phone and kept on reading from his increasingly pointless speech. Agent Franks lifted one hand to his earpiece, scowling. His blunt features twisted into a dangerous scowl, then he walked quickly from the hall. The three government men sitting on the stand behind Stark all reached into their pockets at the same time. The lights of the phone's displays could be seen across the hall. The G-men exchanged glances, and then two of them stood up and quickly walked off stage. The other agents providing security all began speaking softly into their microphones. Phones began buzzing all across the auditorium, except for a few MCB men who had forgotten to put them on vibrate, and those began to ring. Every single MCB in sight had just gotten a call. Something was going down. A murmur rose from the audience. Agent Stark continued reading from his prepared remarks and let the call go to voicemail, but after a few seconds his pocket began buzzing again. He finally looked up from his paper, scanned the audience, saw all the display lights, and realized there was a problem.